What's up, Internet? Welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm senior editor Devendra Hardwarth. This week I'm joined by senior writer Sam Rutherford. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
Going okay. We've also got podcast producer Ben Elman here as always. Hey, Ben.
I already muted myself. Good morning.
Good morning, Ben. Good morning, everybody. We're going to be talking Pixel 10, everything Google announced at their not-so-big event this week. We're going to talk about that because it kind of felt like a QVC or Home Shopping Network event. Very, very weird how they handled all that. And it was also hosted by Jimmy Fallon, of all people. So that's strange. We've got a bit of Gamescom 2025 news as well. As we're recording this, there's likely going to be a Hollow Knight Silksong live stream. I'm very excited to see what's going on there. But yeah, as always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Drop us an email at podcastengadget.com. And you can join us Thursday mornings around 10:30 a.m. Eastern for our live streams, typically. And yeah, if you have any questions for Asking Gadget or the show in general, drop us an email, podcastengadget.com still. All right, Sam, I feel like you've been all Pixel all the time. You and Sherlyn, pretty much everybody has been like looking at everything Google has going. We've got the Pixel 10, the 10 Pro, the 10 Pro XL, the 10 Pro Fold, and a whole bunch of other devices. What's your main takeaway from this event?
I really like what they're doing with the Pixel 10, especially just because it might not sound like a huge change, but adding that 5X optical zoom onto the Pixel 10 and then keeping the price the same at $800, that is just such a nice upgrade for anyone who wants, hey, I want the, you know, the Google flagship phone, but I don't want to pay $1,200 like you have to for the Pro XL just for the bigger screen. And before, you had to upgrade to the Pro model just to get that third telephoto camera. And so, hey, really nice, just basic hardware upgrade. And then, you know, they did some tweaking across the board. The 10 Pro and 10 Pro XL are about 300 nits brighter, their screens compared to last year's model. I think it's about going to be, 3,000 nits for the 10 and then 3,300 for the 10 Pro and 10 Pro XL. So that's just really nice. But of course, you know, the big thing is, hey, this is Google. They're going to lean hard into software and especially AI-powered software. And there's some really interesting things that they're doing, especially when it comes to stuff like Magic Queue, which is using AI to kind of look at the data. And reminder, you know, all the data stays on device. They're not pinging the cloud for this. So, you know, theoretically, less security concerns over stuff like this. And they're looking at your emails and your messages and stuff like that so that, hey, if you are in, you know, Google Messages and you're asking a friend, when was that reservation for dinner tomorrow? It will automatically surface it. It'll highlight that info with like a kind of like a rainbow kind of effect animation. And then you can just press it and it'll send it directly to your friend. So you don't have to go through your emails or your calendar apps and find the thing. It just does it for you. And it's such like a low-key just thing that everybody does all the time, and to kind of streamline that process and to, hey, here's the information you want in the app that you want it when you know you need it because someone's asking you for it. It really just kind of simplifies your just daily life so much. That said, because this does rely on you having the phone and just having your information already in there, that is one of the things that's like hardest to test during a demo hands-on. So I really like the potential for it. It remains to be seen, you know, how long it'll take to get used to it or how long it'll take the phone to like, you know, integrate all this stuff into what it's doing.
Is it only for Pixel 10s? Because
it's for all of the Pixels. So all the software stuff, aside from some special camera features, is going to be available on the full Pixel 10 line.
The full Pixel 10 line, but what about the Pixel 9 and any of the others? Can any of these carry over to older phones?
As usual, Google's only talking about the new Pixel 10 series. I imagine that it should be possible to port this to previous Pixel devices, but Google's not saying anything about that just yet.
Gotcha. And as far as design goes, these don't look very different. I feel like Google's just settled on the overall Pixel look, and it's not particularly exciting, but I guess it's true of Apple. It's true of pretty much everybody right now, unless you're who's doing like interesting phones.
I mean, maybe the Galaxy S25 Edge, maybe. Yeah. I mean, I still lean back to the Z Fold 7 as the thinness of that plus it being a foldable is incredible. But you're right; these phones don't look across the board. Don't look very different than the last ones. We got some new colors as you always. And I do like the indigo blue model that's only available on the base Pixel 10 because it's a callback to that original blue hue on the the Pixel 1 from 2016. So, hey, you know, it's nice. Okay, but, you know, you're absolutely right. The hardware exterior design has not changed very much at all.
I think nothing is doing interesting stuff phones, but that makes me feel like I'm the one saying boo urns.
Yeah, I mean, and I think we went through the same thing with laptops, you know, over the last, you know, 5-10 years, where laptops used to look absolutely nutty, and they kind of just all have a very similar shape. You know, Dell's, you know, not XPS premium line, you know, they have their own look, and obviously Apple has its own look. But aside from that, you know, a lot of companies are doing very similar things.
What if we've just reached max level with phone?
That's what we've been saying this for years.
I definitely think we've
found the perfect form factor.
Yeah, I definitely think we've sort of hit that thing. And it's like, you know, how often do you talk about the design of your dishwasher or the design of your refrigerator, laundry machine, whatever? It's sort of the same thing where it's like, I think this is more of a British term. It's kind of become like a white good, whereas like, hey, these are all just like, they have a basic design, a basic template. You can add a couple flares and maybe you add some colors or some funny metal treatments on it. And that's how you distinguish yourself. But, you know, I think if you ask Google, they would say, oh, we have our camera visor and that's very distinctive. And, you know, I would generally agree with that. And that's the one way that it's easy to tell when you're looking at it like a, you know, mm-hmm. a late model Pixel.
But, I think there are leaked images of the next iPhone that look like they could have a similar like island for the photo stuff, because if they're going to get thinner, the camera stuff has to be thick somewhere. Mm-hmm. So that kind of makes sense. It's funny, though.
I will say I like the camera visor because it the horizontal thing makes it means your phone sits flat on a table, even, you know, and you don't have to worry about like it just feels a little bit more balanced.
It's funny, though, you mentioned dishwasher, fridge and washing machine, Sam, because those are things I have thought a little more about because I got new washer dryer when I moved to this house, but also I have a fancy Bosch dishwasher because I've always wanted one. And you know, there are ways to like stand out in design in really boring categories. I feel like the Pixel 10 Pro Fold could be that for Google, right? Like, how different is that from last year's model?
Almost exactly the same as the Pro Fold, the 10 Pro Fold has gotten a little bit more refinements. If you, I have some side-by-side shots in my hands-on, and you can see one of the complaints on last year was that corner, that rounded corner in the top left was kind of big and chunky, and so Google slimmed that corner down, and they kind of slimmed all the bezels down, and so at least for the Pixel 10 Pro Fold, the outside screen is actually a tiny, tiny bit larger. Not so much that, you know, it would, you know, you want to throw out the old one, but it does look a little bit sleeker, a little bit more streamlined. And I will say, to Google's credit, they did keep the weight and the size the same, which is pretty important because, hey, now the Pixel 10 Pro Fold has a full IP68 rating for dust and water resistance. Foldables before have done the 8 for the water resistance, but not the dust. And that's really important because I think not only should all flagship phones have that, but especially on an expensive phone and something that is prone to like stuff getting inside that hinge, adding that like certified dust resistance rating is super important. So, hey, they were able to keep the overall dimensions almost exactly the same. And there's a new titanium backplate on the main flexible screen and a kind of a thicker layer of ultra thin glass, which I know is a bit of an oxymoron. But so it should be significantly more durable than before. So that's definitely an improvement, especially when it comes to foldables.
Before we move on from the phone, I'm curious if they said anything about whether or not tariffs were affecting their prices. I imagine kind of two scenarios where one, like they would say nothing because they just want you to think that everything is perfect forever, but it's on everybody's mind. Like, how were they able to stick the same price as last year when like monetary policy has been all crazy?
I mean, that's a good question. I think that's like they didn't actually talk about that much. Obviously, the prices are same, pretty much the same, exactly the same year over year, which is great for everybody. I don't know if Google just decided to eat those costs or if they were able to, you know, do some extra refinement or, you know, do some business deals that, you know, were able to kind of reduce the impact of tariffs a little bit. But at least for the consumer side, we're not paying any extra for the latest models, and that's a good thing. That's a win across the board for everybody.
Maybe that's one reason why the designs have not changed much. So they didn't really have to shift much beyond the internal chips and some of the camera stuff too. So that's kind of cool. I did see some reporting, the Pixel 10 Pro Fold, the whole IP68 thing. I think Google admitted at one point that IP68 does not last forever. Like, it wears off over time. So what's going on there?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, especially when it comes to the water resistance, a lot of those seals and gaskets, they age and they get more brittle and they crack. But, you know, most of the time, most people aren't just going to go chuck their phone in a pool, right? It's like, you know, you splash it with water, you drop it in the sink or something. That kind of stuff generally holds up over time. It's like, you know, if you're dropping it down to 5 feet and, like, doing the IP68 test for, you know, five feet of depth for 30 minutes, I believe it is, then yes, you're gonna run into some issues there. It's just kind of an overall general durability, everyday usability thing that is just really nice to have.
Yeah, it's more durable. That's a good thing. How do you feel about the event overall? Because I was surprised. I did not realize Jimmy Fallon would be hosting this and hosting it like fully, like going through all the different products, kind of introducing the Googlers. I could see what they're doing because they want it to feel like an alive event. It's live. If there are any problems, like in the demos or in the testing, they're all live, right? They're not hiding behind a polished video like Apple. But also the vibe I got from it is very much like polished in another way, polished in the way of like QVC or the Home Shopping Network, where they're like, look at this beautiful product. Look at this beautiful camera. And it felt really stilted and rehearsed. And also, I am far from the biggest fan of Jimmy Fallon. I think he is kind of a hack. So his energy also did not really help the situation, I think.
I would say that, like, I would have sort of, I had the same opinion of Jimmy Fallon before I went to this, and he kind of won me over just a tiny bit. And so in some ways, the whole presentation kind of felt like a late night talk show meets, you know, your traditional tech keynote. And that was a really interesting kind of twist. And I think part of the reason why is like, hey, this was the 10th generation of the Pixel phones. And so Google wanted to do something different. And I think they definitely achieved that. But you're right. You know, some parts where, you know, we had, you know, Jimmy talking to some of the Googlers and they were talking about, oh, the phone can do this and it's really awesome. Definitely had some QVC vibes where, like, you know, you were watching a televised presentation where you were there. Someone was trying to get you to buy something, which, you know, they actually kind of were. So and like on some level, it's like, I think Jimmy, you know, he is self-aware to a certain level where he's like, oh, he was cracking jokes about like, oh, I know about agentic AI. You know, that's the name of the game. And it's like, you know, he had some culpability in the fact that, like, he is obviously not the most tech enthusiastic person. And, you know, especially for most people,
tech, I'm pretty for new listeners who don't realize that Jimmy Fallon was on the Engadget show way back when, like 2010,
wait, really?
2011.
Yeah, I didn't
way back
know that.
When.
That's awesome.
The old guard Engadget. I believe he was Josh Topolowski knows him or knew him. But that was also when the Engadget show was like in a theater, like in a big live event. Go back and go look up some of that video. So he is a tech enthusiast, and he's had Marques Brownlee and other people on his show too. So like he is excited about
sure.
that, but he's just not, you know, not as informed as a Googler, you know?
Right. Like, you know, I'm just saying, like, you know, he is not like an AI researcher. And so, like, you know, some of the stuff, like, you know, he can be a tech enthusiast, but, like, you know, he was out there, like, literally chanting IP68. And it's like, hey, Jimmy, like, you know what? I don't care. Like, I think more people should know about this kind of stuff. And so even if it's, like, not the most necessarily, like, it feels a little bit forced, I'm okay with it because he is making a decent point, at least in that case. But it was really interesting to just kind of see this production kind of take place. And, you know, they had a ton of celebrities. It wasn't just Jimmy Fallon. Nick Jonas showed up. There was like a just nonstop kind of celebrity cameos. Steph Curry was not there, but he was like, hey, he's going to be the new kind of fitness coach and using AI to like improve people's jump shots, which is like, okay, if, you know, obviously I'm not going to get Steph Curry to coach me, but if I can get, you know, AI to like help me sink an extra three every now and then when I'm playing pickup, okay, I'm down for that. Obviously it remains to be seen how effective that actually is, but it was just, it was a really interesting, twist on your traditional keynote. And so I'm okay with it. I would love to see them maybe kind of explore this territory a little bit more because as someone in the tech world, I definitely appreciate a live presentation, a live demos, because you are seeing the stuff that goes on. And some of the demos were like, they did your real-time voice translation that sounds like your actual voice, you could hear the audience react and be like, oh, wow, that's actually impressive. And kind of same thing for, like, the natural language voice editing feature, which is like, hey, not everybody wants to learn Photoshop. Nobody wants to, you know, dial sliders back and forth to adjust brightness or contrast or sharpness and stuff like that. And if you can just be like, ask the phone, hey, can you remove the reflections on this photo? Or can you draw sunglasses on a llama? That, you know, being able to just be like, this is kind of the Star Trek ideal where you just like, hey, computer, can you do this thing for me? And the computer knows exactly what you want and it does it effectively. And so being able to see that and see that in a live demo in real time, I think definitely has more of an impact than, to your point, some of Apple's like super well-rehearsed, almost like cinematic style keynotes that they've been doing recently.
Gotcha. It's worth pointing out, they had a lot of influencers, a lot of content creators on this event too. The Call Her Daddy lady was there. I still that, not listen to them.
Cody Rigsby, famous Peloton trainer, was there too.
The Subway Ticks guy was there. And that broke my heart because he was there to just like jump out from the audience. But he also did a Subway Ticks segment, which was all about why the hot take was wired headphones are bad. And I wanted to choke him out because he's sitting there with wired microphones, because that's what you can rely on in a confined, chaotic space like a subway. They're using wired microphones because that works. But they're like, oh, yeah, wired headphones are dumb. You just look silly wearing them. Like, bro, you are getting paid to do this. But also, like, this feels so desperate, Google. Like, you know, like, I think what Apple did was they just slowly, like, choked away, you know, wired headphones to the point where there were no headphone jacks and everything. And they didn't even really talk about
it. But this was also right before they were talking about the Pixel Buds, before the Buds. So
it's like, okay, but that's, none of that is like true. It just felt, to me, that felt forced. Yeah, that you had to pretend that all these headphones are bad when, guys, in many ways, they are still superior to the wireless ones. They have their advantages. Like, they each have their own advantages.
And I think that's one of the things where it's like, anytime you have an outside party, whether it's like a social media person or an actor or clearly like a sponsored guest of some sort, it's always going to feel a little bit forced. So it's like, maybe it's because like we understand the inside game a little bit more. It's like, I'm not upset. And like, you know, think about it from the other way. If you are a social media person and someone's going to come pay you to do your bit on their stage, are you really going to turn that down? So it's like, I'm not too upset about it.
This is the key difference between content creators and like actual media and journalists, right? Like, people keep saying, oh yeah, the influencers, they're the new journalists, they're the new reporters. Big differences there.
Yeah.
We can't just straight up
at the same
that.
Time, it's like, you can't get upset when social media people or influencers get paid to be an influencer. It's like,
that's what they do.
That's their job. Yeah. That's what they're doing.
Their job is attention. Well, not necessarily accuracy. So yeah.
I'm more in support of the times when smaller, quote unquote, people like the Subway Takes guy, who, you know, still has over a million followers on pretty much all of the socials. You know, if he gets paid versus somebody like Fallon, who it's just like, okay, let me just like put this like new sack of money on top of my other like many sacks of money, or like Alex Cooper, who has been like sucking up so much of the available money in the podcast space, because all she's ever done since leaving Barstool is get like 7- and 8-figure podcast deals.
Gotta love it.
That's just me being salty.
Gotta love it whenever that happens. Yeah,
I mean, any media company, if they're gonna try to get eyeballs on a certain thing, they're gonna go out there and scan for who's the most popular, who are people talking about the most. And so, you know, when a lot of times, like, there's a certain like math formula that you can do when you're like trying to, you know, figure out what guest appearances might have an impact and, you know, draw some more attention to our presentation. That, and I think that was sort of what Google was going for. They wanted more of a mainstream crowd. They want mainstream non-techie folk to care about AI in a way that they haven't previously. And so how do you do that? You get people that they might have heard of before that aren't necessarily tech related to come and say some stuff that, oh, hey, now I'm paying attention.
But they should also listen to the audience reaction and see what people are super jazzed about. You said that the live translation feature was something that people were jazzed about. You said that, like, editing a picture just with your like voice commands is something that people were jazzed about. I still don't see those use cases being like put front and center in other AI stuff, but let's get back to actually talking about the Pixel event. So you were talking about the camera visor a bit ago, and there's a new like UI for the camera screen too.
Yeah, new UI specifically for the Pixel 10 Pro Fold. And that's when you're using the main screen. And that's kind of just, it's really nice. So you have the viewfinder on the right. And then as soon as you take a picture, it shows up in a separate pane on the left. And so, hey, you can just see what picture you're taking and instantly, you know, review it and compare like, oh, I got the shot. Do I need to take another one? So for foldable people, that's a really, really nice change. And then also for the Pixel 10 Pro Fold, there's going to be some new drag and drop, you know, being able to move files between apps and some multitasking features, which is really nice because compared to the Z Fold line, Google was actually a little bit behind, especially on like the, you know, more pro user multitasking features. Now, that said, there was one more feature that I want to talk about related to cameras that was super impressive, and that is ProRes Zoom. It's only available on the Pro models, the Pixel 10 Pro and Pro XL. But basically what Google's doing is that there's a 5x optical zoom, that's your basic camera hardware, but then they are using AI to support up to 100x, I guess it's a virtual zoom if you want to call it like that, and they're using AI to fill in the gaps and create kind of a new AI-generated image using that 5x optical zoom, and honestly, the results are surprisingly good. I was, you know, we were, for our demo, we were kind of shooting across the pier, over on the west side of Manhattan. We were getting shots of a water tower that was easily like half a mile away, or maybe not quite that far, a third of a mile away. And it was like, just being able to get that shot, you could not get anything as sharp or as clear just based on the camera hardware that's on the phone. And so it's like, oh, okay, if you're going to use AI to kind of unlock new capabilities, I'm down for it.
Cool. Anything else you want to mention about the accessories and other stuff? Like, they finally have full Qi2 support. That's cool. So finally, like a MagSafe equivalent on all these devices. They have some new chargers. They also announced the Pixel Watch 4, right? Or at least we got more details about that. And
yeah, so
actually, before we go to the Pixel Watch 4, can I ask a question about Qi2? So if your friend has a like just basic Qi2 puck or something, they're like a dedicated Android person, and you are a longtime iPhone person, or vice versa, can you finally charge your phone at your friend's place?
You can always do that. It's the magnets that they're the problem. And now a lot of these are magnetized.
And,
right,
and so,
yeah.
So to kind of get in the weeds a little bit. Google is making Qi2 support available across the Pixel 10 line. The difference is that Google is kind of branding that tech on the Pixel line as Pixel Snap. Pixel Snap is fully compatible with Qi2, although there are some small wrinkles in there, which I'll get to in a second. But basically, if you want to take your MagSafe charging puck and slap it on a Pixel 10, it will work just fine. And same thing with pretty much all of the like MagSafe accessories and magnetic charging stuff, your magnetic wallets and stuff like that, that go on the back of the phone. Those will all work just fine because, hey, at the end of the day, Apple contributed to the standard that is Qi2. And so this is why I've been like crowing about this for a while. Last year in 2024, I wrote Android manufacturers dropped the ball on Qi2 support. So now, hey, we have finally a major Android phone maker is doing full support almost for Qi2. And it's going to be available on the entire family of Pixel 10 devices. Now, the one small wrinkle that I talked about is that there are a couple different flavors of Qi2. There's Qi2 and Qi 2.2. And so basically,
is that just charging speeds or what?
Yeah, and that's really just charging speeds. So the Pixel 10 and the Pixel 10 Pro charge at up to 15 watts wirelessly. The Pixel 10 Pro XL charges at up to 25 watts wirelessly. So it's just a little bit faster, but it still has the same magnets and stuff. And then on top of that, Google is coming out with its own ecosystem of Pixel Snap accessories. So there's going to be a charging stand, which is actually pretty cool because the charging puck is removable. So if you want to take it out and move it around, you can do that. There's like a basic just magnetic stand, kind of like, you know, your Snap stuff where you can just prop the phone up, but there's no charging in it. And I believe there's a standard wireless charger as well coming. But this is probably just going to be the start. I am sure Google's going to build this out over time.
It's kind of a shame.
So let's just take a second to say, like, we've finally figured out charging phones.
Yeah,
well, wirelessly.
Like, everybody can charge everybody else's phone.
Imagine that. Yeah, companies getting together and using universal standards and making it, oh, hey, suddenly everything just plays nicely together. And wouldn't you know it, that's kind of nice.
That, I mean,
also,
to be
consumers
clear,
like have more ability to, if they don't like whatever is marketed toward iPhones, but for some reason the Pixel Snap peripherals, charging peripherals, are more appealing or, you know, fit your design aesthetic better. Hey, that's great. Devinder, what did you have to say?
Wireless charging has always worked between all these phones. Like, it just works. The problem is the magnets, like having it snap into place. So that's what MagSafe does. That's what Pixel Snap does. It is unfortunate that by being called Pixel Snap, this is a thing just for Google's phones. And I feel like it would be better if it was a thing they could be like, hey, all Android manufacturers, like, can you, here's a thing you can deploy across all of your phones instantly.
I agree. It would be
or
nice
if we all just called it Qi.
Yeah. Like, it would be nice if Apple and Google just decided to, like, hey, we're going to stick with the Qi 2 branding just so it's very clear that this is all the same stuff. But I think, you know, people will figure it out pretty quickly.
And I love the magnets. I love the magnets. Use it for my car holster. Like, that bent, magnetized vents, so much better than clamping vents or clamping holders, charging by my phone or by my bed. Like, all that stuff is great. Let's quickly talk about the Pixel Watch 4, which, okay, is the thing. I don't know if anybody's particularly excited for it, but how does it look, Sam?
It looks very similar, but there are some subtle changes. So now the glass on top is kind of domed. It's curved all the way around. But the more importantly, the display is larger on both sizes. They have slimmed down the bezels, which makes the display look even that much larger. And for me, as someone who's been wearing the Pixel Watch 3 for the last year, they made a new charger. And the old charger was so bad because it had these pins. And you could... like, I lost track of the number of times I would put the Pixel Watch 3 on the charger, walk back and go, oh, it actually hasn't been charging for the last hour, so now I gotta wait again. And so now it's a new kind of magnetic wireless charger, and it seems like it works a lot better, and it, you know, has a little bit of extra functionality where if you put it on its side, it kind of functions as like a little clock on your nightstand or whatever. And so that's really nice. And then, you know, there's new satellite connectivity. So if you're in an emergency and you don't have service, you can still, hey, send out that SOS for help, which is obviously very, very nice. But it's, you know, I think Google kind of perfected or like crystallized the design of the Pixel Watch last year. And so now it's about adding features and refining and just like, you know, expanding some of the like health and fitness tracking to more things. And so the Pixel Watch 4 is not a revolutionary change, but it is a very nice, you know, continued improvement on, I think, a smartwatch that is kind of slowly picking up steam a little bit.
I don't think I've ever seen a Pixel Watch in the wild. It feels like a thing that is only among Googlers. But yeah, outside of New York, I don't really see too many Pixels.
I mean, the Apple Watch is still so dominant in the smartwatch space, where it's like, it's the Apple Watch, and then you have like, you know, running people who use Garmins and stuff like that. And then there's like a much smaller section in between. I see Galaxy watches every once in a while. I do see a handful of Pixel watches, but yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Anything else you want to mention, Sam? I think the Pixel Buds 2A.
We got to talk about the Buds.
Yeah, the Buds.
You know, there are some new Pixel Buds 2A. And this is nice because they're bringing active noise cancellation to a more affordable price point. But aside from that, I mean, there's a new stabilizer, so they'll kind of fit more securely in your ear. But These are kind of the mid series refresh. We didn't get a new full version of the Pixel Buds Pro, so that's kind of what. If you know what the Pixel Buds are, the Pixel Buds 2 are the slightly more affordable but upgraded version of those.
That's cool. How do you prefer? Like, do you like them more than AirPods at this point than AirPods Pro? Because it's gotten to the point where I feel like AirPods Pro are just so essential. Like, if I leave the house without them, even though I have other wireless buds, it feels like I'm missing something. It just doesn't feel as nice.
I mean, someone who does not use an iPhone as my daily driver, I can't really use the AirPods Pro because they're so like limited on features and like when you try to connect into other devices. I'm not even sure they actually connect properly on Android devices.
You get basic Bluetooth, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, you get like the most basic functionality. Mm-hmm. So they're not even an option. I still think that like it's kind of a sad state of affairs that basically, whatever phone you have, you should probably use that company's buds unless you want to use basically Sony's, you know, offerings.
That's true. And Bose. Bose is releasing a bunch of stuff too. All right. Cool, cool. Thank you so much, Sam. Moving on to all the other news happening this week. Gamescom 2025 is happening in Cologne, Germany. I feel like the biggest piece of news is that the Xbox ROG Ally handhelds, they're going to be available on October 16th. So that's something we've been like waiting to hear. These are the essentially the Xbox ROGs, the ROG Ally sort of running Windows, and we'll have direct access to, you know, Windows and Xbox games. Sam, are you at all excited about these?
I am, and it's kind of for an under-the-hood thing, because the ROG ROG Xbox Ally is kind of the same thing as the ROG Ally X, but with a little bit, you know, they have definitely changed the grips, and I think, you know, they have done this because Microsoft wanted it to feel more like you're holding an actual Xbox controller, so that's why they kind of have those more pronounced grips that stick out, even though it's not the most attractive design, I would probably say. But I think the key thing is that this is for the first time, the Xbox Teams actually has the ability to change some of the underlying background processes that normally run when you're running Windows 11. And so theoretically, if you can reduce the overhead of the operating system and kind of cut down some of those unnecessary functions, maybe you're going to get a little bit better performance, and you're going to get more on top of all the UI changes that make it feel, hey, you don't boot straight into the Windows 11 desktop. You boot into the Xbox app menu. And so you can just launch your games right away instead of having to like log in and then fire up Steam or fire up the Xbox app. It's giving you an experience that's more like the Steam Deck, which is, you know, I think all handheld makers should be trying to achieve that. Like, hey, you have a dedicated gaming handheld. Just let us turn on the machine and boot into the games without doing anything else, without needing to do anything else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, seems intriguing, but also it's joining like a crowded field. Like there's the Lenovo stuff. There are a ton of things that are just Windows devices. I do wonder if some of those software tweaks are going to make it over to the other Windows handhelds.
Yes, like, that's one of the big questions that I have is like, is Xbox going to release this to the wider ecosystem of Windows gaming handhelds? And I think in their, you know, it would benefit them a ton to do so because they don't care what hardware you're using, really. They just want you to be in the Xbox Microsoft family because, hey, maybe you buy devices or buy games from the Xbox store, Microsoft store, whatever. So I really hope that they do that. I have a sort of feeling, and I have, this is just speculation on my part, that it may be a timed exclusive for the Xbox ROG, the ROG Xbox Ally. And then, you know, maybe sometime next year, they will kind of release that dedicated Xbox handheld UI to more devices.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Also, what's happening during our live stream right now, which I have not had a chance to see, there is a Hollow Knight Silksong live stream happening starting at 10.
The game is real. It's going to happen.
It's happening. This is wild because we first previewed this game. Matt Smith and Gadget previewed this game 6 years ago. And we've been sitting, waiting for an update. And I really would love to know, like, I hope they release some sort of documentary about the development of this game because, like, what is taking so long? It is a follow-up to Hollow Knight, one of my favorite games on the original Switch. I think in the early pandemic, that was a game I just spent a lot of time with. It's a 2D actioner, you know, with really specific combat. Like it's a tough game. It's also a beautiful game. I'm wondering what took them so long because mechanically, it's not like they're building Tears of the Kingdom here or anything. This is
right. It's not a 3D like hyper realistic game. It's a, you know, it's a stylized side scroller Metroidvania. And the thing that I'm kind of worried about is like, are we going to run into a situation where the kind of hype or the anticipation for Silksong has kind of gotten past what the game could ever be? The game could be great, but it's like people have been waiting so long. It's like, are they going to be disappointed? Who knows?
This could be a No Man's Sky situation because we've just been waiting and hyped up so long for this. Also,
I'm thinking it's more likely that it could end up being like a Wu-Tang Clan situation where, like, whenever I tell people, like, maybe if they haven't listened to Wu-Tang before, like, hey, go listen to this. They'll go listen to it and they'll be like, okay, yeah, it sounds like a lot of other stuff that you hear on rap radio now. No, rap radio sounds like Wu-Tang. So in the absence of another Hollow Knight game, a lot of games have caught up. And so even if you haven't played a Hollow Knight, you might be playing Hollow Knight similars. And then when you get to like the OG, like the thing that inspired this recent wave. Okay, but like this thing that inspired the recent wave. I'm not talking about like Metroid or Castlevania or anything. People might still be like, okay, well, like, where is the appeal here?
We shall see. We shall see. I also wrote up a bit of news about NVIDIA's GeForce Now. They announced it's going to be getting RTX 5080 GPUs for some games. That's cool. And they're not raising the pricing. So that's also cool. For $20 a month, you get a pretty decent chunk of like stuff. You get 100 hours of playtime, 15 hours of rollover, 8-hour long sessions. So like continuous sessions and access to all the features from DLSS4. On the 5080. Right now, the 5080 is only going to be on some games like Doom the Dark Ages, Indiana Jones, and Cyberpunk. But like this thing is shaping up to be a pretty good deal for a lot of people. Like even the $10 a month GeForce Now, which gets you similar time but limits you to 1440p. If you're a gamer, if you want to keep tabs on the stuff you have on Steam while you're at work or while you're at school or away from your main rig, like that is. The service is pretty good. Like, I can log in quickly. The games feel good. They look like they're playing locally, basically. They also announced some new features that are going to make the streaming look more like it's a local game. So it's eventually, there's going to be a new cinematic quality streaming mode that supports full 444 chroma subsampling. So that is, like, the best video quality coming to your monitor and better streaming performance and stuff like that. So... yeah, I think GeForce Now is a hell of a deal, and they just need to like make it a little easier to use. Because typically with GeForce Now, it hooks into the games you've bought on services like Epic and Steam, and then when you launch the game, which you have already bought on that service, it basically spins up a virtual computer for you, and then you see like a Steam window, and you have to go in and like launch that game. That's a game that's pre-installed on a virtual computer somewhere. They also announced something called Install Now Games, I believe. Install to play games. They're going to be giving people cloud storage where you could just like install any game, not any game, but a larger number of games at your whim straight to this cloud storage and just play it from there too. So it is shaping up to be like really interesting and really useful if you want a game everywhere and you're just not always, you know, by your computer or you don't have a gaming laptop. So yeah, just want to shout that out too. Check out my report about GeForce Now and all of its upgrades. Speaking of GPUs, I want to shout out a video from Gamers Nexus about the illegal AI GPU trade that's happening in China. They did like a 3.5-hour long documentary about this thing. I'm looking at it now. Looks like it's actually been taken down due to a copyright claim from Bloomberg because they do include some footage from other services. Hopefully they're going to get that back up. But I was halfway through this thing. It is very good. It is very cool to see the YouTubers doing some deep investigation and traveling and like trying to figure out what the heck is happening with some of this hardware, because the GPUs, even though it's illegal to sell them to people in China, like they're still getting there. And the Chinese government does not care if a citizen finds access to a GPU and buys it for whatever reason. So that's a really good video. Hopefully that'll get back up soon. That's at the Gamers Nexus YouTube channel. We wanted to talk about Elden Ring. Was that you, Sam?
Yes. So there has been some reports out of Gamescom that Elden Ring Tarnished Edition for the Switch 2 is not running very well. Apparently, FromSoft is not letting people do game capture because they don't want people seeing how stuttery and performance. And especially people saying in handheld mode, it is just not looking very good, kind of choppy, frame rates just rough. And if you know FromSoft, especially if you're, you know, an old school like Dark Souls player on PC, that game ran awfully. And you remember, if anyone remembers that they had the DS fix, there was so many workarounds to try to get original Dark Souls working well. And it's really disappointing because theoretically, there's no reason that it should you know, be difficult to run Elden Ring on the Switch 2, especially with its like improved performance. And it just kind of points to maybe FromSoft not having the best optimization team for, you know, trying to get these ports running on other hardware, especially because I've played Elden Ring at like pretty solid frame rates on a lot of PC gaming handhelds. And so it's just the disappointing, especially I think a lot of people, if you are strictly a Nintendo console gamer, you were kind of looking forward to having like a definitive version of Elden Ring on the Switch 2. And so seeing these reports is just a little sad.
Also, this is a game where you really need to make sure that you're doing the right thing at the right time.
If there's lag and you're trying to dodge roll, something, Yeah.
If there's lag and you are not hitting your dodge roll, well, then you're going to die even more often than you usually do in a FromSoft game.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. I've seen TikToks of like some people who have clearly misconfigured their gaming PCs and they're playing Elden Ring at like 15, 20 FPS and they're fine with it because their brains are just filling in the gaps between the missed frames and everything. So that's kind of, it's kind of funny. People will find a way to make this happen.
Those people are wizards though.
They're wizards.
It's like the scene in Star Wars where, you know, they have the like opaque helmet on and he just needs to use the force to figure out where the laser bolts are coming from. Mm-hmm.
And news from Pokemon ZA as well.
Yeah. So they're doing some more kind of gameplay reveals for Pokemon ZA at Gamescom. I'm still catching on this because I was at, you know, doing Pixel stuff all day yesterday. But I did see, catch the new trailer for, there's a new Mega Evolution for Victory Bell. And if you're a Pokemon fan, just please go watch. It's only a minute long. It is absolutely hilarious. Victory Bell turns into this giant, like, sack monster. And he's just going around the city kind of mogging people and chasing them down and scooping them up. And
this looks terrifying. Good.
It's terrifying in, like, the best way for Pokemon. This is, like, Victory Bell is such a weird Pokemon to like highlight as a Mega Evolution, so I'm glad they did it. I think it's hilarious. Go check it out.
Awesome. All right, that's not everything we covered at Gamescom. There are a ton of stories out of that, so go check out Engadget.com for all our Gamescom news and certainly all our news from the Pixel 10 event too. Let's move on to what we're working on. Honestly, I'm just thinking a lot about the end of Windows 10 and thinking about how we can cover that in a couple different ways because people seem worried about it. So that's me. I'm also working on a piece around EVs and kind of like why it may be a good time to consider buying one, especially if it's your second car. Or
it is absolutely a great time to
buy an EV. It's a great time. Absolutely. So, Sam, anything you want to shout out?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm working on Google stuff, but for you know all the listeners, IFA is another trade show that's coming up also in Germany. So we should be getting a ton of new, especially if you're looking for a new laptop, some new laptop news. But, you know, obviously another tech show is always good. There's going to be a ton of gadgets. And then right after that, if you're, you know, trying to block out your calendar, it's probably looking like iPhone season's coming up again real soon. Probably, we don't know for sure yet, I don't think, but probably second week of September is kind of what it's shaping up to be. So if you are in the market for a new iPhone or want to see what Apple's got cooking, stay tuned for that.
Awesome. Let's move on to some pop culture picks for the week. And I just want to shout out Mafia the Old Country. I am shocked that this series is still going on. I remember playing the first Mafia. I think it came out like 2004. And I played that in college. And it was such like it was definitely a response to like Grand Theft Auto. But it also was doing its own thing as like a classic gangster franchise. I never played Mafia 2, but Mafia 3 was also really cool. That had like a cool 70s vibe. This one goes back to Sicily and goes back in time and is basically telling you sort of like the flashback sequence in The Godfather 2. It's sort of like that. Like somebody who is very poor, who finds their way working into a crime family and drama ensues. I think it's really well done. Like it is, if you like games with strong narratives, like games that maybe sometimes feel like they're on rails, but games that will give you a chance to just like really absorb yourself in their world. I think the Mafia series has always been great. It does take a while to get going. I think it took like an hour before like the intro kind of ended, but otherwise I really, really like Mafia the Old Country. So check it out if you can. What's up, Sam, with you?
I know this is like way late, but I finally got a chance to watch Dune 2. And I just want to say it is so good. Even if you don't care about what's going on, like moment to moment, the cinematography is just extraordinarily gorgeous. And then this kind of got me into diving into like a deep dive about like Dune lore. And I did not realize, I like read some of these books as like, you know, when I was younger, and I completely forgot how just completely off the rails the Dune lore goes in like future books that they haven't kind of covered in the movies just yet.
So Sam, Dune is like political thriller. It is like a ancestor of like A Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones, like big inspiration for that sort of thing. Dune Messiah is where it becomes obvious that maybe Frank Herbert was like feeling his success a little bit. And then he starts doing hallucinations.
And then his son takes over the franchise after a while. It goes bonkers.
Well, yeah, but like the latter Dune books are like people get possessed by like ancestors. And then the last one is just like, Dune, would you still love me if I was a worm?
Yes. The worms, like, I think they go into outer space at some point. Yeah, it's weird. And then I also wanted to shout out that there's a new trailer for Fallout Season 2. That was one of my favorite shows of last year, I believe. And so, hey, go check it out. It looks like they're kind of going to putting together, and they're not saying much, but they were kind of hinting that like this might be New Vegas themed. So, hey, if you have any love for Fallout New Vegas, which is like my favorite Fallout version of Fallout, definitely go check out that trailer.
Very cool. Very cool. Anything else you're playing, Sam?
I wanted to play more Donkey Kong Bonanza. I just haven't had time. I know I saw a bunch of people in chat talking about DK Bonanza, and I just want to play more of that.
It's weird how that game is just like an instant dopamine hit. Like just immediately you're getting good stuff. Banana. And I have not even gone to the zebra song yet, but I've seen the zebra song and it looks amazing. I cannot wait. Ben, what's up with you?
I'm really looking forward to playing Bonanza whenever I get a Switch 2 because I hadn't played like a Mario game in a really, really long time. And I don't remember if I was watching people play Super Mario 64 or what when like that was the big thing. But I played Super Mario Odyssey a few years ago and I couldn't stop saying to my brother, Nintendo's fun scientists have outdone themselves.
They know how to make fun. Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to a similar experience with that, even though I'm, have no like deep love for Donkey Kong. So Sam, you were talking about being patient or finally getting to Dune. And I see that and raise you with, I finally got to Spider-Man 2. I think those two pieces of media maybe came out around the same time. This is Spider-Man 2 on the PS5.
I was going to say, are we talking about the movie or the game?
No. And also there have been so many Spider-Man 2s.
Yeah. Like but the Sam Raimi one is
No, the best. I am talking about Spider-Man 2 the video game with Peter Parker and Miles Morales.
Oh, yeah. It's between the two. Yeah.
It is a really well-designed game. It seems like this is a game that took in like all of the criticism that people talk about when they talk about video games. So there is not just the Spider-Man. There is also like a little mission where like Mary Jane gets to like really contribute to the story, and like that's really welcome. There is also Miles's love interest in high school, who I'm not remembering her name right now, but she is deaf, so like people sign to her. There's a whole mission where you play as her, and like the sound of the game is entirely different. It's just muffled. They find a way to use the DualSense like vibrations in a fun way. And then that's on top of the fact that swinging around Manhattan and taller buildings part of Brooklyn is just so insanely fun. My only complaint about it is that they also had to include Spider-Man's home neighborhood of Astoria. And if you've been to any parts of Astoria, or really any parts of like New York City outside of like big built-up Manhattan, you know that it's not really like New York City's Spider-Man. It really is Manhattan's.
Yeah, Spider-Man doesn't have a lot of big buildings to swing on out in Astoria.
Yeah, he doesn't have a lot of big buildings to swing on, and so they like. That's something that would totally like break the lore of Spider-Man if, you know, you had some people like all the way out in Flatlands, Brooklyn or something saying, hey, Spider-Man, why don't you come help with crime over here? And he has to say like, sorry, fair citizens, I just don't have
You're too far from the subway. He has the wingsuit in these games. Both he and Miles have the wingsuit.
Yeah.
So that's helpful.
Yeah. So it's just a really well-designed game. Every time I get into like a couple of the main story missions, I think that I know what I'm going to be getting into, and it just consistently surprises me. There's another new mini game. There's another, like, it's not just swing here, go fight these bad guys, swing there, go fight these bad guys. One of the recent missions I played was like you're in a particle accelerator and you're trying to like fix things in the particle accelerator. The particle accelerator turns on and all of a sudden it becomes not quite a platformer, but it's a like you're trying to figure out where to put Spider-Man in the tube of the accelerator because there are these like pulses of static electricity or something that are coming at him. But of course there's like a little gap for him to be in. It's like consistently, it feels consistently fresh. And if you want to just swing around and fight crime, there are like random encounters too. I just really, really, really enjoy it. And go check that out if you haven't.
I just love exploring, like walking around, swinging around that New York is so fun, especially now that I'm missing the vibe of the city. It does kind of capture it, the noise, the crowds, people just like being kind of blasé about and crazy shit happening. Yeah.
If we're talking about like environmental storytelling and like being in a big city too, you have to focus on the photo missions. And these are the things that most people probably leave for the absolute end of the game once they finish the main story and they're just trying to like be a completionist. But you're going to little fun scenes that you're taking pictures of. And all of them are just like very big city things to do. So like one of the photos is people having a picnic on a roof. Another thing is like down on the like lower part of Manhattan, near the shoreline. There's no sand in real life New York City around there, but like maybe it was left over from Sandman, like the very early intro mission or something, but like people made like a really big, intricate sand castle.
It really makes you appreciate the world building that they do for that.
Yeah, yeah. Or like people, you know, on the street with, you know, sandwich signs, the end is near, that sort of thing. And then when you send it in to like the nice newspaper guy, you're not sending this to J. Jonah Jameson. He will call you and give like a little bit more storytelling. So I just thought it was really, really cool.
I need to finish that game. I think I'm like halfway through. But yeah, Spider-Man 2, thank you so much, Ben.
So thank you, everybody, for listening. That's the end of our episode. Go check out all of the new Pixel stuff. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by me, Ben Elman. You can find Sam online at
Sam Rutherford on Twitter or on Blue Sky, whichever one works.
You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Blue Sky, and also talking about movies and TV at the Filmcast, thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me your favorite Spider-Man story or run in the comic books, you can find me at Hey Bellman at Blue Sky. Email us at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, RSS or Spotify. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, folks. We're out.